From the Free Speech Project at Georgetown University, this is Speaking Freely. I'm Sanford Unger. Every day, about 500,000 barrels of crude oil flow from Canada through North Dakota into South Dakota and Iowa, ending in southern Illinois, all by way of the Dakota Access Pipeline. The nearly 1,200-mile pipeline became a focus of protests in 2016 when Native American opponents and thousands of their supporters made their way to North Dakota to try to block the pipeline's construction.
Get back! Get back! Get back!
In early 2017, protesters were removed from the area, construction of the pipeline was completed, and oil began flowing. Around the country, there's now a building boom of natural gas pipelines. That's according to State Impact Pennsylvania, a collaboration of public radio stations and the Allegheny Front, a weekly program focusing on environmental issues in western Pennsylvania. State Impact reports that in 2017, there were 60 pipelines either completed or under construction, and about 20 of them go through Pennsylvania. One of those is the 200-mile-long Atlantic Sunrise Pipeline. It goes through 10 Pennsylvania counties, including Lancaster, where county officials were warned they could face protests similar to those in North Dakota. That worried Scott Martin, a former Lancaster County commissioner, and now a Republican state senator. In an effort to head off protests in his district and state, Senator Martin has introduced a bill in Harrisburg that would require demonstrators convicted of a felony or a misdemeanor in the state to reimburse governments for any costs associated with the protests. Pennsylvania State Senator Scott Martin is our guest on this edition of Speaking Freely.
In the aftermath of North Dakota, where you saw the state and local government left with over $40 million in local costs for law enforcement, for cleanup, something like 23 million pounds of trash, 40 abandoned vehicles, slaughtered cattle. I mean, it was a pretty ugly scene.
That went on for a long time.
That went on for a long time. And so in getting ahead of that, and as you're aware, of seeing the incidents in Baltimore and Ferguson and Charlottesville, where people were taking basically what I 100% believe in, someone's right to free speech and the peaceful gathering of individuals to express their dismay with anything. But when people were starting to cross the line and saying the right to protest does not include your right to set things on fire, the right to destroy someone's property, that was what kind of led to saying, how can we look at this and have that community conversation? That was the genesis of why this bill came
to be. So tell me about the pipeline in your county, in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. I gather there are some people who are discontented about it and who have...
Yes, absolutely.
Including an order of nuns in...
I'm very familiar with that. Going back to my days before getting in the Senate, I was a county commissioner when this first... And we had the first public hearings on this. We actually got the company to actually move 50% of the line away from natural areas that people were worried about. We were trying to get it away from sensitive natural areas and putting it onto farmland. Most farmers in Lancaster County are like, ah, as long as you reimburse me for crop damage. And we're also an area that had six major pipelines that already came through certain aspects of it. This pipeline development is growing in Pennsylvania. We knew this is something in the current environment of where we see bad things happening at protests to try to get ahead of the curve.
Where do things stand at this point? Has the pipeline been built?
I think right now they're currently at about the halfway point. And I know
halfway through the county?
Halfway through Lancaster County.
Right.
I live in a place called Marduk Township, Pennsylvania. It's going in across the street from my house.
So are you protesting?
I was not protesting. But most of it's underground now. They're obviously planting grass or whatever vegetation back over top of it in a lot of the areas. But you mentioned the St. Anne's retirement community,
right.
the nuns there.
What about the nuns concerned about it?
Yeah, part of me believes that the nuns were being taken advantage of by some of the outside groups. But the interesting dynamic with the nuns, and as a Catholic, I have to say that, I'm not speaking, they have a wonderful mission. Part of me was a little upset because if you go on their website and look at their retirement community that they sell, one of the top things that they tout as an amenity to live in their community is central gas heat. And in here, they were upset about, and this was a farm that was next, that they owned the land, mm-hmm. that it would be coming through that area. So there's mixed feelings in Lancaster County. Overwhelmingly, the vast majority of Lancaster Countyans support building a pipe. We're used to it. We have it.
Does it have advantages for the county? Does it make energy more affordable? Well, these are affordable?
Open. One of the things that they tried to get rid of that whole thing, that this was all going overseas to Russia. And that was a big talking point. This is all exported. In reality, the way it's an open access line. So in Lancaster County, and they may have had it up in the Wilkes-Barre area back in the area, is like UGI Utilities. It's the smaller gas companies. If they get enough interest in opening up a natural gas market, you can tap into the lines there. The pipeline's basically just the transporter. And that's how they basically sell these things to the FERC. They'll say, you know, we have a buyer.
FERC is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission.
They say we have a buyer for at least 10 years of gas, and that's where they route the pipeline to. Here, UGI in Lancaster County could tap in, or a major, let's say, manufacturing plant. And we've actually seen that occur in Lancaster County in other places. You know, a big Lancaster County thing, Shady Maple Smorgasbord. They actually tapped into a line not too far from them. They saved almost, I think it was $350,000 a year in energy costs.
Really?
The Eastern Lancaster County School District saw that. They ended up tapping in and saved $250,000 a year for their building. So it all depends. If you have a buyer, you can tap in. And that's what's hopefully going to occur. And looking right now, 50% of Pennsylvanians don't have access to natural gas.
Now, your bill, as I understand
yes.
it, includes religious observances as a kind, as a part of protest that
yeah.
would be covered by the bill, where there would have to be.
Well, the bill would basically any protest, regardless,
any protest.
That where people.
But it includes explicitly religious observances, does it not?
Anything that would require, if someone would commit a crime that requires a massive police response, there was no litmus test whether it was religious or non-religious. Listen, I'm not a curmudgeon. There's
no. The only reason I raise it is the nuns were opposed, and I thought that was. They felt.
Well, I personally haven't never heard from the nuns being against my bill. I have heard from some of the groups that they've been putting together. They built a chapel on their farm. Even though it's not officially a chapel, the bishop never recognized it mm-hmm. as such. I think a lot of them looked at it as a way for me to try to undermine their efforts. As a county commissioner, I oversaw emergency management. I know what it's like for these resources to be expended. Big one, EMS. You know, a lot of these things, many ambulances come. A lot of folks don't know. Even if no one needs medical attention, it still is a real cost.
Have you had protests on the order of the ones in North Dakota? Has there been?
No. The most expensive one that we had three ladies who blocked off basically an entire neighborhood, and they put their hands in these concrete contraptions that have a metal bar inside, and they wrap chains around their hands. And it's almost impossible to pull, just with the leverage of the chain, for law enforcement or whomever to pull it out. And that incident in itself cost about $75,000.
Were they arrested?
They were arrested.
And were they tried and convicted?
I don't believe they've had the court. This was just, it wasn't too long ago. We're actually tracking what all the costs were. We're gathering all the data.
If they were convicted, and if your bill passes the
yes.
state legislature and is signed by the governor, they could be held responsible for those $75,000.
Now the court, it'd have to be obviously applied by the court. And what's different about this bill too is a lot of times, let's say they were arrested by a local police department and they're charged and they go through the process. What this bill is, it allows a local government entity, let's say maybe it's the county emergency management, to be able to petition the court during that proceeding to say, these three individuals cost the taxpayers of our commonwealth or our county or local municipality, you know, X number of dollars, and we would like to be reimbursed for that.
You know, I always wonder about things like that when it's, they say it costs, you know, $500,000 to defend the community
yeah.
In the times of protest and people clashing in the streets and so
yeah.
on. Is that necessarily extra money, or is that money that's already been allocated, which is just used, resources that are used on this particular occasion?
Yeah.
If they're not used, if the police are not out doing
yeah.
this, is somebody going to get money back? Or I don't quite understand how it's calculated.
In North Dakota, they were expending out of their current year's budget. For instance, I think one of their departments, I think it was their local sheriff, they're like a countywide sheriff there. They flew through almost an entire year's worth of their budget.
So they were over budget.
Oh yeah. So by the time their end of their, by the time where they were starting to literally run out of money in their allocation, they would have to be reallocated money from somewhere. part of it is to say, before someone thinks about picking up that trash can and throwing it through a glass plate window at a store and it's on fire, you know, to think about, you know, not doing that.
So your real point here
is
to serve a deterrent effect, to try to prevent some of the protests that have been taking place.
No, and I will say, when my bill was first introduced, it started a broad community conversation. I heard from Tom, overwhelming support from the community, including people who literally, maybe they didn't even like the fact that the pipeline was coming through their farm, if there was somebody like that, that they would contact us. They saw what was going on in other places. And they, well, we don't want this to happen here. And that conversation really helped. We got a lot of those, the protest groups, openly commit to peaceful protest. We're committing to peaceful
protest. Isn't that what it is for the most part, peaceful protest? I mean, isn't that the tradition?
Yeah, and I agree with that. That's what
and especially on environmental issues, I think, isn't that mostly peaceful protests?
I think most of it, we have a long history of this country of having peaceful protests, and nothing in my bill did I ever want to. We even adjusted it some points.
Because, I mean, you look back to the Boston Tea Party. So, you know, they dumped tea in Boston Harbor.
Yeah.
Raise the cost of tea.
Right. Raise the cost of tea, or called in the local, I don't know what they called them, I guess they were sheriffs back then.
Right.
My real thing was to incorporate the judicial process and the conviction aspect to really get to the people who actually make, not only the ones who were worried about creating damage, but the peaceful people there. And the organization that came there to have a peaceful event, and you have a few knuckleheads that show up and start doing things. Now, and it's not a right issue or left issue. It happens all the time. We get these radicals from both sides that come and want to create chaos.
Is that a risk in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania? One doesn't think of Lancaster County as a violent place.
Right. At the point where we were most worried, there was a farmer who was opposed to the line, who basically, they called it the stand. And they wrote it big letters across their barn. That was the gathering place. And there were already reports from the Susquehanna Regional Police Department that was in that area, where even the anti-group that was stationed there, and they would have trainings on how to protest, and they were raising money for bail.
Trainings on how to protest peacefully?
Peacefully. They actually had a few characters show up that they actually called the police and were worried about this. Because there is a movement on many different issues where there's a transient individuals who go from these, you know, from protest to protest, and some of them don't always have the best of intentions.
Who are they, and what are their motivations? Where do they come from?
I don't know, but that was really what was concerning.
Are you aware of any investigations, FBI investigations, or any investigations of who these
transient
protesters might be?
A lot of the folks that are involved in intelligence in the communities that look at a wide array of things, from gangs to things like this, I'm sure they have to be on people's radar. But one of the incidents in our county, there were 7 arrests. And out of those 7 arrests that occurred with those individuals, 6 of them were from New York.
Really?
There is obviously a transient groups that move around in support of, whether it's an environmental issue, no matter what it might be. But we see that often in protests where people from that community. So from my local taxpayers are thinking, great, so that incident alone required $20,000 worth of various response to occur and roads being shut down, inconvenience, all for 6 people from New York to come here and disrupt our community. Not peacefully in that case. In the case. Peaceful? That's okay.
So it's the old sort of concern about so-called outside agitators that many people felt during the Civil Rights Movement, for example. Some people in the South said, well, why are these people coming from the North to disrupt our way of life? In the end, made positive changes, though.
Yeah. I would say the positive changes in our country, though, through the Civil Rights era, I think the message of Dr. King was very important, nonviolent.
And weren't most of the protests nonviolent?
I think so, too. I think 100% believe that if we had more of that in this country, especially in this day and age where it seems to be so much division, peaceful assembly and protest, to me, is the way to go.
So you're not trying to discourage people from protesting in general?
What I want to discourage is the person who wants to come and create chaos and destruction and assault people. That's, to me, what the focus of the bill always was.
Have you attracted a lot of bipartisan support in the Pennsylvania legislature for the bill?
I wouldn't say bipartisan. I think I come from a very Republican area in Lancaster County, and most of the people were very supportive of that bill. I'd say most of the people who were opposed Who came forward. I had some Republicans who were opposed too in the community.
Do you expect this to become law in Pennsylvania?
I don't see a scenario where the current governor would sign this bill.
This is Governor Wolf.
Governor Wolf. And I think in the final format where the bill can be solely focused on those who truly create a lot, high dollar damage to our communities, that's, I think, hopefully we can get some buy-in. It wouldn't just apply to protests. You had asked me about the religious order or the nuns earlier. I didn't want to say this is just a pipeline, anti-protester bill for pipelines, because it's not. My motivations, that was a large part of it, because I was sincerely worried in the 30-some-odd miles coming through Lancaster County or any other county in the Commonwealth that this could be an issue.
I've read, and I think you've said, that the bill was inspired partly after Charlottesville, after the events at Charlottesville.
Well, I think it dropped right after Charlottesville, but it had been in the works
when
for a
while.
When
you say dropped, you put it
I introduced the bill. The co-sponsorship memo had come out in May. The idea, when I first started really talking about it, probably was when I first came in the office within three or four months, so it had been early 2017. And it was really on the heels, it was that prior fall, that the access pipeline in North Dakota.
Right, right.
But we started Charlottesville, seeing the costs.
The big Charlottesville event, if you will, was last August of 2017.
Yeah, yeah.
And was there something that concerned you about Charlottesville that made you push this harder?
I would say that it fits into the same category of my concern where folks who come for peaceful protest and then you end up seeing assaults and, and God forbid, people getting hit by cars. That, to me, it runs counter to peaceful protest.
Sure it does.
The more I see...
What about that torchlight parade? That seemed a little worrisome.
It does, and I listen, we have places where, and it's a big worry when the KKK wants to get on the courthouse steps and rally, and may not agree at all with what they stand for, and it may make us sick to hear some of the things that may come out of some people's mouths when they're standing on those steps and spouting their hate. They have the right to say things even though we don't like it. But if they turn around and start assaulting the counter protesters or vice versa, to me that crosses the line.
Right. So how do you read Charlottesville? It's what happened, what it established, what we have to worry about after Charlottesville?
I'll tell you what I'm really worried about in our country is our ability. This isn't a left or right issue. I point to everyone. Our ability to sit across from a table and have a discussion and look at each other and say, I think this. And you say, I think this.
Well, that is clearly under attack.
Oh, it absolutely is.
And that's one of the purposes, by the way, of the Free Speech Project, is to try to figure out how we can have civil dialogue on the issues that divide us.
One of the best things I ever did in my time as public service was literally after I was elected in 2007, I was 34 years old as a commissioner. We have three commissioners. We actually took our wives out to dinner together, sat down, and established a relationship.
Probably happen today.
I miss that about being a county commissioner because everything seems so hyper-partisan in today's world.
Sure. How did we lose that?
It's a good question. I know a lot of people will say, hey, look at the current administration. Personally, it goes back further. But where did we start seeing the riots and setting our own communities, our own neighborhoods, our own businesses on fire, and how that would have a lasting impact? To me, it's where I thought we're losing our way, and it just seemed like we had one after another, and now we have a presidency that it seems like we're even more polarly at looking
certainly
at different
polarized,
things. Absolutely.
Right. Let me ask you one last question.
Sure.
In 2017, there was a physical brawl on the floor of the Texas House of Representatives.
Wow.
Rather famous. There are photos. Yeah. There are videos of it, because of disagreements over immigration policy. And there were literally members of the Texas legislature who had guns in their pocket with the open carry law, concealed carry law, I guess it is, in Texas. Has it reached that point in Pennsylvania yet?
Well, we're not supposed to be carrying guns at the Capitol. There was a big article about that recently. I guess some members who were worried about safety did.
And are there brawls fights like that in the...
No, there's nothing like that. And my message to people of any walk of life, especially those who are in the public camera, we need to set an example. Our children are watching.
Scott Martin is a Republican state senator representing Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. For an extended version of our conversation, you can visit the Speaking Freely section of our website, freespeechproject.georgetown.edu. Our project is funded by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation. I'm Sanford Unger. Thanks for joining us for this edition of Speaking Freely.